listening to The Ouachita Chronicles.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Ashley.
So I feel like I kicked off one of our last episodes by saying, I love art, because I do.
Mm-hmm.
But today, I need to say, I hate technical difficulties.
They are the worst.
They truly are the worst. We actually already recorded this show once.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
We did.
We did. And then disaster struck.
Disaster struck in the form of a power outage.
A power outage that wouldn't have been such a big deal because producer Trey was literally already done, like, editing this entire episode. Mm-hmm. And he was just listening to it in playback to make sure he didn't miss anything. He was proofing. He was doing his job. And we had a power outage that took down several things in our office. And that file was one of them, man.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. I mean, the poor boy, I actually felt sorry for him that day.
I felt bad for him. And it's surprising that you felt bad. Sometimes I don't
know
if
empathy.
You're capable of such feelings. But you did. You emoted.
It's all a mask, man. I have a lot of empathy. I just keep it
hidden. I know
it. Because then people might take advantage of my empathy.
They do. People take advantage of it. You witnessed that with me on the regular.
On the regular. You're too nice.
I know. I need to be a little bit more mean.
Yeah. So we ended up having to re-record today's guest. Mm-hmm. And I would say unfortunately, but really probably not unfortunately, because I know she did a terrific job. My co-host, Jerry, carried it. And
well,
she had a little help
from producer Trey.
So this was actually the second recording of this episode, and I'm really eager to see what maybe didn't get worked into the first time we recorded it. So maybe it was a blessing in disguise.
I think it was good. It actually ended up working out great because his new book, Gentle Reader, and we're talking about Richie Lowry, is out now. And if you stop by and visit him at Richie's Discount Auto Glass on 71 in Mena, he will give you a free copy if you mention the podcast.
That's pretty awesome. Well, on the subject of technical difficulties, before we segue into meeting the guest, if you experience some technical difficulties like producer Trey did, or just our entire station with that power outage, you know who can help you out? We'll just say your computer got fried. Who can help you out?
Oh, snap, girl. I know. That's Don's Easy Pay.
Don's Easy Pay can help you out because they've got the electronics that you need. So should Mother Nature decide that you need to completely re-record a podcast,
you can go get equipment, computers.
At Don's Easy Pay.
Mm-hmm.
In Mena, in Waldron, in Boonville, in Dequeen, in Poto, as you would say.
All the places near you.
And there's another one. I feel like we're missing a location. Anyways, check them out on Facebook. You can find all their locations. That's Don's Easy Pay. Now, let's meet our re-recorded guest, Richie Lowry.
All right, welcome to this episode of the Ouachita Chronicles. My name is Trey Youngdahl, filling in for the wonderful Ashley Smith with the normal co-host, Jerry. And today we have Richie Lowry in the studio, back in the studio, as a matter of fact. Say hi, Richie, for the second time.
Hi, everyone, for the second time.
Now, this is not Richie's second episode. This is going to be his first episode that's aired, that's been published.
Re-recorded.
Yeah, we're going to have to re-record it as a result of a
technical difficulty, we'll call it.
Mother Nature struck.
She struck hard. How are you today, Richie?
I'm doing great.
Well, we thank you so much for sharing your time with us again. I'm super excited to have you in the studio with us because I know you. I've gotten to know you through writing, and I've always been a fan of it and wanted to bring you in to talk about your writing, what brought you to Mena. And so why don't we start with how did you come to Mena? Because you're not from here, correct?
No, I'm not. I was born in Tennessee, but I grew up in Colorado, which is a long way from Arkansas in distance, in culture, in climate, in every way. I grew up along the Front Range of Colorado and married my high school sweetheart, even though she didn't know she was my sweetheart in high school.
How does that work?
I didn't talk to girls,
but you were sweet on her.
But the most beautiful girl in my class, I finally got to know through work. We worked at the same furniture factory. And when it came time for graduation, the powers that be asked you to pair up with someone to march into graduation. So I got every ounce of courage that I had, and I asked her, would you like to march with me? And she goes, oh, I would, but I've already asked Russell, or I should say Russell has already asked me.
Oh.
And so my heart sank because I thought this was my one shot. I had a legitimate reason to ask that didn't seem weird. And she said, but if you talk to Russell and he says it's okay, I'll march with you. So I thought, oh.
Now you've got to go ask another guy.
Okay, so how big was Russell and how good was he at fighting?
I was not outmatched. So that was okay. That was a good thing. And he was one of the few people that I actually knew, because not only did I not talk to girls in high school, there were only about 10 guys that I talked to, because I was super shy in high school. But anyway, I went and I talked to Russell and I said, would it be okay if? And he says, sure. Says, you know, we're just friends. And so that would be fine. And so my first ever date, if you can call it that, was marching for graduation.
Aww.
But the second date was even more interesting.
Tell us about
it. Oh, man.
Well, I didn't have nerve to ask for a second date because I didn't talk to girls. So she called and she said they're having a company picnic at Elitch's Garden, which is now it's a Six Flags. It was an amusement park in Denver. She said, would you come? Well, yes, I would come. I don't do well on motion rides.
No.
If I'm not driving, I get car sick. I get seasick on a boat. Well, guess what I get on rides that spin you around?
Ooh. Butterflies? In love butterflies?
In love, I'm trying to put this delicately, and I don't know how. In love throwing up?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. I was being optimistic for you.
It sounds like a good name for a romance movie.
Yeah.
There you go. But I ended up, she took me to her home, where I changed out of my clothes and into her daddy's clothes, who was much bigger around and had much shorter legs. She washed my clothes.
Aww.
We got them washed and dried while we sat and visited with me in funny clothes. You know, it couldn't be more awkward. And then when I got my clothes clean and back, we went back to Elitch's. We rode the train. We sat and talked. We didn't ride any more rides. When I went home that night, I said, this has got to be the one. Anyone that can put up with that mm-hmm. is the one.
Aw.
And 2 years later, we were married.
That's so sweet. I do too.
But after living for 6 years married in Colorado, I'm jumping the gun. We had just been married a couple of years. My daddy one day got a call from a friend and said, we're going to Arkansas to visit a friend tomorrow, and we're just going to be gone for a short while, just for a day. Says, would you like to ride along? I still have no idea why that phone call was made. Maybe Providence, I don't know. And my daddy never took time off work, but he said, sure, I'll go. So he rode down with his friends, and they were visiting another friend who had retired to the MENA area from Colorado. So they came down for the visit. While he was here, my daddy went in. At that time, it was the Stroud office with John and Marion Titsworth, and he walked into the office, and by the end of the day, he owned two houses.
That's wild, too.
I had the money to just go somewhere.
Why two houses? My grandparents lived in Colorado, and I'm sure he was thinking that if we move, they had moved from Michigan to be with us in Colorado, so if they moved, he would need to move my grandparents also. So within a few weeks, he had moved his family to MENA, Arkansas.
Wow.
4 years later, after visiting once a year, I ended up moving to MENA. I had come down to see him in February in the middle of a snowstorm.
Mm.
It was a blizzard in Colorado. They were closing the roads behind us. We get to MENA, Arkansas. The weather is 70 degrees. We go on picnics. We go hiking. And those of us who live here know that February often does not have nice weather.
Mm-hmm. No.
February is usually kind of some of the roughest weather we mm-hmm. have in Arkansas. But that year, it was beautiful. We spent a week. We get back in the car to go to Colorado. Drove in a blizzard across Kansas to get home. Man. So I told my wife, let's move to Arkansas. And she's going, well, if we can sell the house. We put it on the market. 2 weeks later, it's sold.
Wow.
6 weeks later, we are residents of MENA, Arkansas.
Wow. That happened fast.
Fast. Very fast.
Now, at the time, did y'all have children?
Yes, we had one little girl.
So how old was she and what was that like for her?
She was almost two.
Okay, so it wasn't in the middle of a school year or anything like that?
No,
okay.
It didn't do anything that bothered her. She wasn't really aware.
Right.
The only thing that she became aware of, my wife was very city.
Oh.
Mm.
Did that MENA mesh is well?
Not very mountain? City. Yeah. Well, she would go to the mountains all the time, but she grew up in Denver, mm-hmm. in a very busy part of town. So they spent time in the mountains, but she still was a city girl. The culture shock was something. And even though we had ticks in Colorado, it was nothing like Arkansas. We never had any chiggers in Colorado. So my daughter, by now, been here a couple months, mm-hmm. 2 years old, when family would come, she would pull up their pant legs and check for ticks. Because my wife was she really checked carefully. And so my daughter would check everyone for ticks.
That's hilarious at 2 years old.
Right.
Keep your inhalers at the ready. The Washtenaw Chronicles will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Ashley.
So, you know, we have this thing in the South here that we call floating. You heard of floating?
I've heard of the floating. I've been on a float or two.
So I, for a long time, have had a bucket list float.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about your bucket list.
My bucket list float is to float the Buffalo River. The Buffalo River is America's first national river, and it's located in north central Arkansas in the gorgeous Ozark Mountains.
Yeah, I floated it actually as a child, and the best place to do that is at Buffalo River Outfitters. Buffalo River Outfitters is an authorized concessionaire on the Buffalo National River. They're located in St. Joe, Arkansas, and they've got floating and access to camping and fishing, hiking's around. All your needs are taken care of at BRO. The bros will hook you up.
They've got canoes, kayaks, rafts, shuttle service.
Yeah, if floating is your thing, they've got one-day trips or multiple-day trips, and they're all made easier by renting from BRO. When you're on your float, you can see beautiful limestone bluffs, the wilderness, and unparalleled scenic beauty.
And then, after you've spent a long day on the river, you can cozy up in one of BRO's spacious and comfortable log cabins. They've got stone fireplaces, wide porches, fully equipped kitchens, wooded settings. They've got cozy cabins for two, or cabins big enough to accommodate 10 people.
Y'all should definitely visit the Buffalo River Outfitters store and stock up on everything you need while you're there for your Ozark adventure.
And their knowledgeable staff can accommodate any questions about the Buffalo National River. You can also order books and maps online to prepare for your visit with them.
So if you're ready to plan your Buffalo River adventure, you've got to check out BuffaloRiverOutfitters.com to find out more and book conveniently online. Give them a call at 870-439-2200 and follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
When are we taking our bucket list trip? I mean, you got to go with me. You're my best friend.
Well, let's do it soon.
Soon.
So where at in Colorado are you from?
Well, we moved from Loveland area. Yeah, my wife grew up in Denver. I lived growing up in a number of small towns along the Front Range. Decono, Frederick, Erie, and then Loveland.
The reason I ask is because I used to live in Silverthorne, Colorado.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really expensive. That's why we moved to Arkansas.
Right.
We have ticks, but we have a great cost of living.
We do. You know, you got to take the good with the bad.
Well, that great cost of living is why my dad bought two houses.
Okay.
Because at that time, a house that would cost $50,000 to $75,000 in Colorado was $15,000 here.
Whoa.
In the 70s.
Yeah. So you could buy two and still have a little chunk of change.
If you sold I live in a much nicer home in Mena than I would have if I hadn't owned a home in Colorado that I sold.
So when you get here, what are you doing? I mean, that's a 6 weeks, boom, you're here. What was anything set up? What were your plans? How did you?
I was going to start a business and apparently I was going to starve to death. But I started a business from scratch. Fortunately, I didn't have a mortgage payment because I sold my house in Colorado on time payments and used my monthly payment there to make a monthly payment here. So because of that, I was able to exist, but just barely, because it was very difficult to get a business going. But I started a body shop, painting, repainting cars, and I titled it Richie's Auto Refinishing.
Nice. Is that something that you felt like this area was interested in? Did it fit into the already existing economy and things that were available? Or what did you think that it was a need that needed to be filled? Was there a lot of interest for that type of thing here at that time?
It was all I knew how to do.
Okay.
So it was the only experience that I had, because I had been running a shop in Colorado. So, if you have to do what you know how mm-hmm. to do. I did. did, before too long, get an offer for regular employment with a regular paycheck, but I realized that there would never be any advancement, that would just be where I was at from then on. And of course, it was at, you know, minimum wage or just barely over a minimum wage level. And so even though I didn't have steady work, I realized that that steady work at that level wasn't going to provide any future. So I stuck with trying to get my business started.
How did that evolve over the years?
It took 2 or 3 years to get to where I was actually making enough to live on. I had an uncle that lived in the Dallas area, and a week at a time, he would arrange for work from his friends. He would get a job for me to do. I would go down to his place of business. He had a mechanic shop in Grapevine, Texas.
Wow.
And I would work for a week at a time, and I could make more in a week than I could make in a month or two here in Mena, Arkansas. So it kept us afloat.
Wow.
For several years.
Why do you think that you could make so much in a week there and it was so slow here? Was it because you were new, or was it people didn't have money for that type of thing?
It was both. I'm trying to think of a delicate way to put it, but someone who lived and had been born and raised in Polk County would not do business at that time with someone who had not been born and raised in Polk County. So it was a very kind of a closed scenario that it was hard to break into. And the other thing was that wages were just significantly higher other places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cost of living was low here, but the cost of wages was low. And so it was just much easier to make money somewhere else. And then the other thing is, when I was in Dallas, I was working 16 to 18 hour days, you know, because you were there for a limited time.
Mm-hmm.
So you took advantage of the time while you were there.
Do you feel like, I mean, so how long have you had a business here in Polk County?
Since 1981.
And what's the math on that?
It's 40 years.
40 years. This is a 40-year anniversary of you being an entrepreneur in Polk County.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like in those 40 years, the attitude has shifted much?
Oh, a lot.
In what ways?
Well, in one way, the numbers have changed. And I think now you're more apt, when you get to know your customer, the majority of my customers now moved into Mena rather than were raised in Mena. Mm-hmm. So that demographic has just changed. And I don't think that those attitudes, even among the people that were born and raised here, are no longer here. You know, I'm not a sociologist or whoever studies those kind of things. But I think that in that time, the 70s and the 80s, there was a fear of the outside here.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have this a little bit. There are people here that don't want the changes of the outside world coming into Mena. I may be one of those people, Val, because I love my town.
The way it is.
I like it the way it is. Change is always uncomfortable.
So when did you start writing?
I started writing, well, I've written my whole life, but never that anyone else saw. When I was in grade school, I was a really bad poet. And I wish now I can't find any of that material, because I remember it being bad, but I don't remember how bad it was. But I remember one time when I was in the eighth grade, and the teacher assigned our class that everyone in the class was to write a poem. There were eight people. It was a small Christian school. There were eight people in the seventh and eighth grade, and that was the class, was seventh and eighth grade. And so everybody knew that I wrote bad poetry.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
And so I wrote a poem for everybody. Every poem that was turned in, I wrote.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Everybody in the class just had me write their poem.
Y'all pulled a massive prank on your teacher.
This is terrible.
And I tried to, well, yeah. And I'm going like, you know, y'all deserve whatever grade you get on this.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I think that a lot of times at that grade level, it's more of a participation grade.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have 500 misspelled words, you're probably going to.
Right.
Probably going to get a decent grade. But anyway, I did. But I never actually wrote for anyone else's consumption until, I believe it was 2008, when I saw my first blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend that came over to the house and said, I want to show you something on the computer. And so she got on the computer and she got onto her daughter's blog. Her daughter lived in Canada. And so they didn't see each other very often. She says, we keep up with this blog. And her daughter would write stuff about the family, a few other things. She was also a musician. She was a, I guess you say, a knitter, a person who knits, and she would actually make patterns.
Okay.
And so she would publish these things on her blog. And I looked at that and I went, that's cool. And I saw at the top of her blog, there was a button that said, make, I don't know what it said, make blog. But anyway, if you wanted your own blog, you hit this button. So I started playing around. 30 minutes later, I had my own blog. So I just, well, what am I going to say on my blog? And for probably 6 months, I may have every day or two found something to write about. It was just a release for me. So I started blogging and I started making friends with people over the internet that found my blog. And I'm going like, how does someone find this? I didn't understand the concept, but it was interesting. Now, another interesting part of that story is that first blog that I ever saw, the lady's name is Talina Winters, and she is a major published author now.
Wow.
She's not like a Mina self-published author like myself. She's a major published author.
Wow.
It's had several, I would say, romance novels, and now she's writing fantasy.
Nice.
But
good for her.
That was the first blog I ever saw, and it's interesting that she, and we're still sometimes in contact.
Nice.
You're an OG fan.
So that first blog was called
Anarchy's Musings.
And how did that come about?
For no particular reason. Because the very first line that came up when it said start blog is name.
Mm-hmm.
And so to move on, I had to have a name. And it came to me. And I have no idea of the thought. I'm from Arkansas. And I was going to muse about things. So I just typed that in. And I suppose at some point in time you can change the name. But it's there.
Well, I think it's very fitting. It's wonderful. So how did that blog morph into your books and the writing experience and contributions to local publications? How did that come about?
I had written an occasional article for the newspaper, and I'm not even sure exactly how that came about. I had a friend who was at the time was the sports editor at the Mina Star, and I got to know the editor. And so occasionally I would just send something that I had written, and if it was an interest, and sometimes he would put it in. I did a couple of what you would call hard news stories because I just sort of got involved or thought that the story ought to be in the newspaper. I would write an article. I would send it in. And apparently, if they have space and there's an article, a newspaper editor likes some free material.
We rejoice. We rejoice gladly when that happens.
So it had happened just a handful of times, not very often. But it would have been the fall of 2015. It would have been fair time in Mina, Arkansas. The Mina Star made a change in editor, and the new editor came in, and the very first week that she needed to put a paper out, it was to be about the upcoming fair. Well, she happened to see information that I'd put on my blog with photos the year before. I guess she was just on the internet looking for some resources to know what the fair was, or, you know, throw somebody in a town that they've never been in before. They come here within the day they start their job. They need to write an article about the fair. And so she contacted me. Can I use some of your information? I'm like, sure. Anything you want, you're free to use. Just, you know, just use my name. That'd be fine. That would have been, I'm trying to think, fair is September. Is that right? Anyway, that December, I get a phone call from her and she says, we're making a change at the paper and we're going to put a weekly article on the religion page from a local writer. Is that something you'd be interested in? Well, sure, because egos are such that if somebody thinks that you can do something like that, it feels nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, yeah. And I said, besides that, I've got this backlog of material that I've already written. So this won't be hard.
Those weekly deadlines.
Until I actually started. But my first article came out in January, the first paper in January in 2016. The title, we talked back and forth and I thought, well, Anarchy's Musings, that's what I've kind of been known by. But this is supposed to be kind of specifically have a religious tone. And so I said Anarchy's Faith. And she resisted at first. I don't know if she said, well, she was afraid that some people, I think, might think Archie does have a demeaning aspect to it.
Well,
there is. Yeah. And I think she was from out of town and she didn't want to offend. And she was, so she came up with several other ideas. I came up with every other ideas. And I said, this is the one that feels right.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't think most people people that live here. And I even talked about that in that first article, is that, hey, I now feel like an Archie. I'm right. not an Archie. I wasn't yes. born here, but I have embraced this area. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like an Archie. And I don't think that negative connotation goes back to the Dust Bowl days, the Depression, mm-hmm. and people from Arkansas going to California to get jobs. I remember my grandfather who moved from Michigan to California in the early 30s during the Depression to get work. But then when the Arkies and the Okies started coming, he hated them. He ended up moving to Arkansas because my daddy brought him here after spending a lifetime of saying derogatory things about people from Arkansas. So I find that a little poetic justice. Uh-huh. But that's where that negative, I don't think that negativity is there any longer. And so that's how the title came about.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Keep your inhalers at the ready. The Washtenaw Chronicles will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Ashley, do you know what I love to do other than obviously work and hang out with you?
Eat?
Yes, I also eat. But what I was thinking of right now was napping.
Oh yeah, you do love a good nap.
I love to nap. It's my hobby. It's my favorite pastime. I love to nap on sofas. I love to nap on beds. I would probably nap underneath my desk if you'd let me. And I'm looking for the optimal nap haven.
You need to go to Dawn's Easy Pay.
What's at Dawn's Easy Pay?
Everything. Basically, the best napping furniture possible. I mean, you can get recliners. You can get full living room suites, sectionals. You can get mattresses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure they could probably hook you up with something to put under your desk if you think you can get away with that. They carry Catnapper and Ashley and so many more. And if it's not on the floor, you can special order the piece that you want.
Okay, but how am I going to get that to my house if I don't have a truck?
They offered free delivery and setup.
You know how much I get paid. What payment options do they have?
Oh, they have got you covered. Everything at Dawn's is extremely affordable and they have finance and payment options. You can buy it retail just straight off the shelf. You can do a rent to own with them. You can do 180 days same as cash. You can do 6 months same as cash on any purchase over $999, and everything is included on the price, so you don't have to figure the tax.
Ooh, no math?
Dawn's takes the brain work out of it.
Well, how far am I going to have to drive to go and get a napping device?
Well, we're in Mena, so we're lucky. There's a location here, but in Arkansas, there's also a location in Waldron and one soon to come into Queen. If you're in Oklahoma, you can go to Broken Bow or Ida Belle or Poto, and they're also opening one in Boonville, Arkansas, that is a new format called Dawn's Home Store. And if you need more information on any of this, you can find their Facebook page and you can search by location, or you can just call the Mena location for more information.
So how did you go about pursuing getting your first book together?
I had been thinking about a book for a while because I had the material sitting there. It's pre-written. I mean, if you have so many articles, you mm-hmm. already have material. And as I looked online and found there are a lot of places where you can do what they call vanity publishing, but the cost was always high. But one day while I was looking, I found that on Amazon, you can publish at no cost. If you do all of your own editing, if you do everything yourself, you just upload a file and Amazon prints books on demand. And there's no upfront cost. Until you buy books, there's no cost.
That's awesome.
So I started, I said, I'm going to do that. The first two books that I put out were very amateurish because I did not know how to format. All the words were there, but on the inside of the book, the covers and so on, they didn't look like you'd gone to a bookstore and bought mm-hmm. a book. But I got better at it. And so although I don't like the computer editing, I've gotten to where I can accomplish it with enough work and starts. I've been self-published.
And how many books do you have?
I now have those first two, you can still buy them because once they're on Amazon, they don't go away. But I repackaged them into a book, and I coined the title Devotionals from a Small Town because mm-hmm. they're each devotional in nature, and I live in a small town. And so the very first one that I repackaged, that's the title I gave it. But then since then, I've done Causing a Splash, Rusty Treasures, which has a lot of stories that I've collected about cars. Mm-hmm. And then I've just come out with one titled Gentle Kindle reader that you can actually buy on Amazon right now, but I have not promoted it yet because I'm still in the, not in the editing, but the proofing stage. Mm-hmm. Because the only way to really proof the book is to buy it, get it physically in your hands, and look at it.
There's something very different from looking at something on a screen.
Yes. And so until you know exactly how it's going to be, I expect that in the mail today.
Okay, awesome.
And when I get one that is meets my standards, you'll be the first to get
one. Okay, good deal. I love that. That's so great.
We'll get to put it in the Pulse library,
right? Mm-hmm, we do. We have a running library of all of the writers that have come through here or contributed in some way, and they're like little treasures to me. I love that.
I would like to give a shout out to Michael Reisig, mm-hmm, because he's one of the reasons that I pursued the self-publishing, because I had read his books and he's a customer of mine. And so when he would come in, I would sort of pick his brain and try to get some ideas, mm-hmm, about how do I do this? Mm-hmm. And he's been very kind. And as a matter of fact, people don't really review on Amazon because I have lots of books out, mm-hmm, there. But I have a review from Michael because he was so kind.
That's so awesome. To do that.
But he was, I would say, instrumental in giving me the inspiration, mm-hmm, that I could write a book.
Mm-hmm. That is so awesome.
How do you go about promoting your books? Is it just through like Facebook and stuff like that?
Social media is really, mm-hmm, the only method that I have.
This is not your books are not a moneymaker for you, correct?
No, and I don't. As a matter of fact, I price them not to be moneymakers, simply so that if someone goes to Amazon, I price them as low as Amazon will allow me. I have a profit margin, I think something like 19 cents a book.
Okay.
But they won't let you...
The big books.
Right. They, mm-hmm, won't let you lower it any more than that. But I'm never going to quit my day job, mm-hmm, for writing. But it's amazing to me where they end up going. I hope no one here is so vain as to have Googled themselves, but I have. And I found a book of mine on an Australian used bookstore website.
Huh.
And I am going, how did a book of mine get to a used bookstore in Australia?
That's pretty cool.
That's rad.
I don't know how that. So you never know. And it wasn't one of the books, and I have never had an idea what happened, but there was a several month period on my blog where I had as many views from France as the United States.
Wow.
And it was just, there were thousands and thousands of views each month from France. I'm going, how does that happen?
That's awesome.
Someone there had to, someone that had viewership or readership, mm-hmm, had to have reposted. That's the only way I can see that could have happened. But it's been unusual, the things that have happened. I get an occasional phone call or a letter that someone's read a book and they contact me. And that always feels good when you've written that someone paid attention to it.
Something you had to share resonated with somebody else.
Right.
That's how you know it's a ministry.
Right. And that's why that's why I price things as low, mm-hmm, as I can. And I actually give a lot of books away to customers. So when someone comes in, if someone comes in and says, I read your article in the Pulse, I go, oh, would you like one of my books? Because that's, I know, awesome, there's an interest there, mm-hmm, that you're not just, or if I just, you know, a lot of times just in discussing with people, you get a feel that they're interested in, mm-hmm, religious things.
Yes.
I don't want to push books that have a religious bent on someone who's not interested. It right. just doesn't seem
well, that's like that works. When I first read your column, I had moved to MENA and was the editor of a newspaper at the Star, and read your column and was just totally blown away by it. And what I like about it is it doesn't shove religion or theology or any of these dogmas in your face. It's just you observing everyday things, some things that people might would overlook, or taking a memory or experience, and you see and convey the underlying hidden truths that we could overlook if we weren't paying attention in that, and talk about things in a parable type of way. And it resonates no matter what your faith or even lack of faith is. It's across the board good material, and is especially especially, I think, great for someone who is maybe questioning their faith or their religion, and gives it's a good springboard to start thinking about such things if one's not already of a mindset to consider faith in their relationship with their Creator.
One of my objectives is that even if a person has no interest in religion or theology, that there's something there that's interesting enough to get them to at least read partway, because I want to start. I don't want the first line to be telling you what to believe or something out of Scripture. I always want Scripture in these articles, because what I try to do when I'm making a point, I want to be gentle. There's too much 2x4 theology where I do hit you over the head with it, and this is what you need to believe. So when I'm making those points, I try to use Scripture, because it's harder if I just quote Scripture. It's harder for you to get mad at me if you believe in the Bible. If you don't believe the Bible, that's one thing. But if you believe the Bible, you can't say Richie said.
No,
I didn't say it. I quoted it. And so I try, but I want there to be an interesting story. And as I was editing my last book, I have seen an evolution where I started out with a shorter story and more theological expounding, if you will. And I've tried to kind of intentionally flip that formula around to have more story with a shorter point. I read something one time that said, this was talking about speaking, public speaking, but that most public speakers try to get way too much information in. And we not, and this is not just religion, not just sermons.
In general.
It's in general. There's only so much that's going to be remembered. So make it so that you're focusing on that and not so much. My problem has always been editing down, editing down, because I have a lot to say. I have a lot that you need to know.
That reminds me of something that I learned when I worked for United Way in Shreveport, and our director, executive director there, Dr. Bruce Wilson, he would tell us all the time, when you're out there fundraising, when you're out there talking to these organizations, people don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Right, exactly.
You don't spend all your time visiting with them about specifics, information, yada, 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 the things that are important to you, because that doesn't matter to them. It would be better to visit with people, let them know that you care, and don't, even if you walk away not having actually made an ask for fundraising or for contributions or for partnership, people don't care about that until they know that you care. And I feel like that you have really, really, really conveyed that you care in your writing before you ever introduce information from the Scripture, whether that's you care about a person that you're talking about or a memory or an experience. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so easily digestible by people who even lack faith, because it's obvious that you care.
Keep your inhalers at the ready. The Washtenaw Chronicles will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
So, how about if it's lunchtime? What are we going to have from Wendy's?
You know, I really like Dave's Double for Lunch.
I really like their pub fries.
Yes, pub fries are delicious.
No, dude, the pub fries have a warm beer cheese sauce and applewood smoked bacon. Do you know what else they have the lockdown on?
What's that?
Rewards.
Rewards? I'm all about some rewards. Tell me.
You can download their app and you get 10 points for every dollar you spend at Wendy's. And right now, you get $3 off every mobile order over $15.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me you could have gotten breakfast for me with a 2-for-4 deal. You could have gotten breakfast for the entire office with a 2-for-4 deal, spent over $15 and then gotten $3 off and fed us all.
Jerry, it's that time. You're going to have to be an adult. You need to download the Wendy's app yourself.
Ugh. Well, it doesn't seem that difficult, so I guess this is my opportunity to start doing things for myself.
That's exactly what you should do, because with the Wendy's app, you can order online, you can view the menu, or you can just locate the Wendy's nearest you.
But can we have Producer Trey pick it up for us?
We could have Producer Trey pick it up, or they will actually deliver.
Shoo.
Yeah, for sure.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So if you're like us and you love Wendy's and you need more in your life, make sure and visit the Wendy's location nearest you. Because remember, Wendy's is always fresh, always hot, and always satisfying.
too much, I don't want to be critical, but too much religious writing talks down to the mm-hmm. reader and doesn't show any empathy with the reader. It just says, you need to see things the way I see it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, over I don't know how many years, but there seems to have been a shift in a lot of the religious writing that I read, is that you're not a good Christian if you don't see things the way I see them politically.
Oh, that's the worst.
And so, you know, you can't avoid everything, but I try. I have political beliefs.
Sure.
But I don't, as a Christian, our political beliefs should be second and not mm-hmm. first.
Yes.
And so I try to, sometimes in that editing down mm-hmm. process, I will think, you're getting a little soapboxy there. You're trying to talk somebody into your viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And do you remember you decided that wasn't your focus?
Right. Well, so, Jesus decided that wasn't Christianity's our focus.
Right.
He said, let the Romans have their way.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, empathy isn't as evident in Christian writing that I read as it seems like it used to be. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm reading the wrong things. I don't know. But I read a lot of religious material. Because first of all, I want to understand mm-hmm. what other people are thinking, because too often the fact that I don't agree with you may come from the fact that I don't know what you're thinking.
Right.
And if I hear one line about you, oh, well, Jerry thinks this.
Right.
Well, until I find out from you, and the way I find out from other Christians that mm-hmm. I don't meet personally is from what they have published, what they're writing. Mm-hmm. And then once I read that, then I have a better idea about them. And in this writing that today I've seen two focuses. The first focus, trying to think of a nice way to put this, but I'm just going to use the word ugly.
Yeah.
There's too much Christian writing that's just ugly and hateful. And I'm going, like, how do you fit that with Scripture? And then the second one that I see, and theology is complicated. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. Many, many extremely smart individuals have spent their lives studying theology. So it's very complicated. But so much religious writing is so highbrow mm-hmm. that it's just, it might be very good, but it's boring. And you know, I lose interest reading boring things, even if the information is
right.
Good. And it's like, I have an interest in science. I like to read science authors who have a way of talking to regular people uh-huh. that it can be understood. Because often then that will refer to a technical paper, mm-hmm. and I'm interested in that. And I go to the technical paper. I have to quit because I don't understand the jargon. I need a translator, mm-hmm. and that's what there are good science writers who can translate that highbrow science mm-hmm. to where common people can understand. And that's a little bit what I look at myself when it comes to theology. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm high-minded or highbrow theology, but I want to make it so anyone can understand it.
Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, in that, you know, information in and of itself, who cares? How does it apply to my life? How does it apply to my routine? How does it apply to my relationship with God? Science, technology, theology, all of these things. If you're just reading facts, well, those are just facts. But once an author can convey how you can apply it, how it applies to you, they convey that they care, or this is why you should care about this information, then those light bulbs start to go off. Aha moments, eureka. And I think you're right. You absolutely do that with your writing.
It might be interesting fact that someone who writes about religious topics has as a mentor, can a mentor be someone you've never met?
Uh-huh.
But have as a mentor an atheist.
Absolutely.
But growing up, I was introduced to Isaac Asimov as a writer. I love his writing, and I've read everything I can get my hands on by him. He did a lot of fiction, science fiction writing, but he did a lot of straight science writing. He was actually a professor before he became a published author. And he has a way of taking complex scientific mm-hmm. things and make them easy to understand. And then he would, actually, the gentle reader that I use at the tagline of every mm-hmm. article.
I love it.
And that's the title of my latest latest book comes from him, because he would refer to you as the reader as he was writing. Mm-hmm. When he would bring a point out, he would refer to you as gentle reader. And that's just always stuck with me. As a matter of fact, it was just because I had read so much Isaac Asimov when I was writing my very first article, the very first Anarchy's Faith column. When I got to the end, I needed to make a wrap-up paragraph. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to talk. I write in a, I call it a conversational style, mm-hmm. where I'm addressing you personally, and I'm talking about me personally. Mm-hmm. And I just, without thinking, put that gentle reader in the first one. And when I read that, I liked it. And so when the second article came out and it was time to write the last. And so every single article that I've written in any of my books or in any of the column have ended up, the last paragraph starts gentle reader.
I love that.
That's mm-hmm. I really appreciate your open-mindedness that you were mentioning earlier. I think that that's really important, especially in spiritual or theological discussions. I feel like it is really important to be open-minded, to sit down, whether you're speaking or reading on either side. It is really important to be open to what they're saying. You know, I think that that's a really important thing. Well, Jerry, do you have anything else?
No, are we on time?
We are on time. Are you ready to jump into lightning round?
Oh, well, I guess so.
Kick it off, Jerry.
All right. If it was the end of the world as we know it, apocalyptic type scenario, and you could only have one snack food to get you through, if you're still here, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here in that situation. You would. What is that when you...
Die?
No, not die.
Oh, what do you say?
Well, like if...
Do we need to have a theological discussion?
No, we don't. We don't. Okay. Situation where... I was thinking of Armageddon. Anyway. Right. If a situation like that occurs and you're here and you can only have one snack food for the rest of your remaining time, what snack food would it be?
It's going to be roasted nuts. I don't know if I had to pick one. I guess mixed nuts, because they would be, yeah, I love nuts.
More options with the mixed nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is your favorite hobby?
Oh, I have a lot of interests, but photography, I would have to say. I love taking photographs, although iPhones have almost ruined the hobby part of it
really
because
has.
I'm so lazy. I don't get out any of my equipment. I just have my phone in my pocket and I take photos, but I love photography and I love looking at other people's photography.
Hey, I've got some photos you should look at.
To see said photos, you could go to treyoungdahl.com. That's TreyoungDahl.com. Or you could just go on Facebook. That works too. Back to the show.
You mentioned one of your favorite authors, Asimov.
I'm not sure how you say his
name. I'm not even going to try. Mm-hmm. I'll butcher it. What are some of your other favorite authors?
Oh, I like to read a lot. So that is a difficult scenario. I'm trying to narrow some down. It changes. He's mm-hmm. the one that I've stuck with, mm-hmm. but I'm rereading because of some conversations that we had in the trial episode. I have gone back and started rereading the Foundation series, and that's what I'm reading right at the moment. My problem is I don't pay good attention to names.
Okay.
I just read, it was a series of two books. I'll tell your name. Deborah Feldman.
Okay.
She wrote personal experiences about leaving an Orthodox Jewish community.
Oh, wow.
And learning about that community. And then her second book goes more into after she left. And first one is called Unorthodox. The second one is called Exodus.
Hmm.
It goes into her digging into the roots. Her grandmother was the sole survivor of her family at Auschwitz.
Oh, wow.
So I really like personal stories.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating.
And I really like history.
Yeah.
I love history.
Your turn, Tree.
Are you a movie fan? What's the last movie you watched?
The last movie I watched. I don't watch a lot of movies, but the last movie I watched, and I have to come up with the name. I haven't been in a theater for a long time, mm-hmm. even before COVID. It's not something we do very often, trying to even think of the last movie. But we watched a movie with Diane Keaton, but I can't remember the name of it. It's a fairly late movie.
Huh.
If left to my own devices, mm-hmm. I would simply watch YouTube.
What do you like to watch on YouTube?
Real people.
Mm-hmm.
I have people that I watch routinely that live in, there's a guy that lives in Russia. It's called Survival Russia.
Hey, I know him.
Life in Yakutia. There's a lady who, that's the coldest place on the planet, northern Siberia. Her life there.
There's an Arkansas couple that you follow as well, right?
Yes, Dome Life.
Dome Life.
I follow them. I started following them, Cody and Kelly, because they put a lot of videos about this area.
Okay.
So I try to find stuff mm-hmm. about this area, but I just love, and then my wife calls it nerd TV. I have a bunch of people who explain science and do science experience. I like to watch that kind of stuff. But in all honesty, if I was alone, I would need no streaming services. I would just need YouTube.
If you could have a dinner party with three people, alive or dead, you can invite anybody in the world. No language barriers, no time barriers, nothing. Who would you invite to your dinner party?
Well, first would have to be my mama. She's been gone a little over 3 years. And the little personal stories that I write, I really think that she is the one that created that in me. She would always talk about little things that happened in her life. And then when she'd see a twist that she saw as providential, she'd say, "That's a God thing." So she would tell a little story, something that had happened, and she'd say, "That's a God thing." And so I would really like to have a dinner party with her. And then I've read Isaac Asimov my whole life. He just fascinates me. He's so intelligent, so knowledgeable, and knows so many things. So whatever topic comes up, we can have a discussion. And then I love studying Paul from the Bible. And I think it would be great, because I would like to see Paul and Isaac Asimov discuss their belief systems with each other, because mm-hmm. two super strong, intelligent mm-hmm. beings that have differing viewpoints. I'd just love to listen in on that.
Mm-hmm. That would be an interesting debate for sure.
It would be.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up. Richie, thank you so much for coming in for a second time. We're going to have to give you a paycheck. You spend so much time here.
We appreciate it so much.
Well, this is so much comfortable than my shop. There's no AC at my shop.
Well, then we'll have to make sure we schedule you come back to visit with us when those temperatures reach the triple digits and you're trying to escape your shop.
If I've been at the shop, you won't want me in here.
Well, thanks so much, Richie, and you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to be on.
Keep your inhalers at the ready. The Washtenaw Chronicles will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Hey, Ashley, do you know what I appreciate about you?
Everything.
Of course, but specifically, I want to talk about how you're just a wealth of knowledge. You have so many people, places, things, events, opportunities. You are a networker, and that has really helped me in moving to Arkansas and getting comfortable here. And we have a mutual friend who also wants us to make sure that we're sharing a bit of information that other people can keep in their knapsack effects, and that's Richie Lowry. So this little nugget of knowledge for your knapsack of facts is all about Richie's Discount Auto Glass.
Oh yeah, of course, Richie's. I've been a preferred customer of Richie's forever. I do have a personal testimony. So I have a teenage son who is mischievous, ornery,
mm-hmm.
doesn't think before he does anything.
Mm-mm.
And
God love him.
In his hijinks, he happened to put a pretty significant crack in another teenager's windshield, right? Mm. So this resulted in, the cops, I'm just going to be honest here, getting involved. But I immediately was like, hey, my kid's fault. I'll get the windshield replaced. Take it to Richie's and get a quote on it. Well, this other party involved took the vehicle somewhere else and got a quote. And then they called me and I said, no. I said, if I'm paying for the windshield, you go to Richie's mm-hmm. to get the quote. And they did. And so then I had two quotes in front of me, and I could compare Richie to this other auto glass place in town. Richie's was over half the price.
Half?
I mean, we're talking from $800 for that windshield to like $320 for that windshield.
What are you going to do to replace your son?
Oh, that's a really good question. Does Richie sell teenage sons?
I don't think so.
Oh, bummer. Get on that, Richie. Contact Richie at Richie's Auto Glass by calling 479-394-9938, or you can just visit him in person at 3008 Highway 71 South in Mena, Arkansas. It's time for that portion of the show we like to call Wrap Up Ramblings with
Producer Trey.
Whoa.
She was just tame again. She's really been behaving herself lately.
Yeah. I've been a good girl.
I'm actually the one that needs the wrap up.
Usually it's me, because I've missed more episodes. This is your first episode that you didn't sit in on.
Yeah, it's the first time to not be here. And due to, you know, work mm-hmm. just being insane right now and life being insane, I normally have a chance to, you know, listen to these episodes before they go live. Sometimes even before before we sit down to do our outro so we can refresh our memory, because we just do so much, you know?
We juggle it. We can't work because we're working.
Right, right, right. But I haven't had time.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to have to fill me in. What happened with Richie Laurie?
He came in and was awesome. Of course, I knew he would be because, well, not only did we re-record it and had fun the first time, but I've been able to read his column for the past several years. And I just think he's an exceptional person with a kind heart, good advice. His insight into just little small minutiae that most people don't pay attention to, and his ability to convey that into a parable or something that you can get more out of, to me is so inspiring. And so I loved having him in the studio.
Something I learned about him is I didn't know he was a photographer. I didn't know that. I actually slipped him one of my business cards before he headed out, and I figured he just like wouldn't look at it or whatever, but I actually ran into him at Walmart, and he said that he looked at my website, and he like asked me for like tips and tricks and stuff like that for photography.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that was kind of neat. Yeah.
That's one of the things that's super special about him, is if he says something, if he's engaged, he truly is engaged.
He means
what he says. He's not one of these people that's just blowing hot air. He is a genuine person, and I always enjoy visiting with people like that.
Well, having known Richie for several years, and the thing that always stood out to me about him was his kindness, first of all, because in any situation, he's just been so kind and calm, level-headed.
Yeah.
Even when we were not him and I having a discussion or a problem, but we were trying to work something out in regards to like a booth that we were doing for an event, and things, I'll be honest with you, things were not going Richie's way at that time with the situation. And I, of course, I was doing everything I could to, you know, remedy that. But, you know, he completely understood. He knew it wasn't my doing there, but we worked together, found a solution, you know, and he was so patient. And another thing that I really admire about Richie is while he has very, very strong religious beliefs, he, like you said, he shares them in a way that would never make anyone feel uncomfortable or pressured. It's just knowledge and good things that people need to know in general, whatever your beliefs are.
One of the things we talked about in the episode that came up was people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And he does such a great job at conveying that in every way, that he cares about people. He cares about the individual. And once you've established that, then people are more open to what you have to offer, what things you know. And he does a great job of that in his day-to-day life and in his column and his books. Again, this most recent one is Gentle Reader. He's got it there at his shop. He will give it to you for free. He doesn't write and share this for money.
No,
for profit. He does it because he cares. And if you stop by and visit with him, he will give you a copy for free.
I'm sure he probably shared this during the episode, but is there like a place online? Does he still write a blog? I know
he does. His column still appears in The Pulse every week, but it also is on Anarchy's Musing. It's a blog online that you can find just by searching for Anarchy's Musing.
Oh,
or
good
going
deal.
To the description of this podcast.
Okay. Trey says he's going to have a link in podcast description. So we will look for that. All right. Well, as always, thank you for listening to the Washtenaw Chronicles, brought to you by Don's Easy Pay and Don's Home Store. You can find us along with other great shows at thewashtenawpodcast.com. You can contact us at thewashtenawpodcast@gmail.com, and make sure you find us on Facebook and Instagram and give us a like. Until next time, Ashley and Jerry and producer Trey
bid you farewell. Thank you for listening to the Washita Chronicles.